This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Chuang, joined by Shawet Zabdullah and Wong Xiaoning. It is the 13th of June 2019. Ladies and gentlemen, we're 18 days away from halfway through the year. Are you guys fearsome at how fast time is flying?
Always. Don't know how to account for it. Don't know why. Yeah.
Time, and we're not even really having fun. That's the irony of it.
Are you not having fun, Chuang?
Well, it's okay. Ish-esque, ups and downs, you know, more ups and downs, but still. Do you know what I mean?
Chuang, I'm hurt.
Right now, I'm in sheer ecstasy being on air with you, Sharitz.
Oh my gosh. Make no mistake. Yeah, I can see that truth coming out of your mouth.
Yes. So,
it's good to see you.
It's good to see. I've been away. I've been in the land of the rising sun 2 weeks, 9 days. You know what? Developed country status does not do much for your pocket, because that's what Japan is, right?
Equals expensive.
No developed country in this world, in the G7 or G20, is cheap to go to. It's horrendous. And then when you've got two children, you multiply everything by four, and that's even worse.
Yeah.
Why are you laughing?
Visit Malaysia, yeah.
So
you should go Chuti Chuti Malaysia la.
I do. I love Chuti Chuti Malaysia.
Chuti Chuti.
Right now, Sharitz, right? We take our kids all kinds of.
There's all sorts of weather you can find in Malaysia. You can go to Cameron Island if you need to cool down.
KK also. Mountains and rivers and Genting is highways and byways, you know.
Genting is just 40 minutes away.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Not much to do up there, though, Genting, other than, you know, lose your money.
It's one big mall now.
That's right.
And also, is it the what shopping place do they have?
Factory Outlet.
There you go.
Simon or Oliver something.
I like Jason. Factory Outlet because I could find my size over there. Apparently,
yeah.
All the rejected size, all the oversize and over.
What are you? 6 foot two? 6 foot one?
6'1".
6'1", yeah. Yeah, right about my height, minus 70.
Yeah.
Plus 7 inches.
Another truth coming out of Chuang's mouth.
Would like to be, but not really. Okay, what's on the docket this morning, chaps?
Yeah, we were speaking about tourism earlier. We are about to introduce our new logo for Visit Malaysia Year 2020 after the abysmal logo that we had last year.
Really?
The horrible one, yeah. The one with the, is it a penguin or?
Malaysia, anyway. We got penguin one.
It's going to be...
But I think it was the orangutan, but never mind.
So it's going to be announced in June. Again, a lot of submission this time around. So we're going to, just explore that.
And I'm going to be talking about adventure, trying new things, breaking new records. But sometimes just because it's there doesn't mean you should go up.
Exactly. And I talk about how name and shame has arrived in retail. Stay tuned. Don't cut the cord. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was the Fab Four with Can't Buy Me Love. And before that, Santana with Oye Como Va. I'm Chuang, joined by Sharitz and Xiaoning. And this interesting little piece from The Guardian, chaps, about how a Canadian store owner, trying to name and shame users of plastics in a way, hopefully to make them use less of the offending substance. And quite interesting because as opposed to using quite horrific graphic details and visuals of, you know, if you're a smoker, then dying babies, for example. He's put these logos on his plastic bags so that if people use these plastic bags, they might be embarrassed. This one particular one on The Guardian, Into the Weird Adult Video Emporium, reads one plastic bag. And you wouldn't really want to be seen on the bus with that, would you?
No.
Another one, I think, was a Ward Oyman Wholesale. I give him credit for coming up with these names, though.
I know, and it's quite well designed as well. So he's spending a bit of coin on this. But,
yeah, so the operative word here is might be embarrassed. But apparently they're loving the design so much that a lot of them are using it and collecting it, and perhaps probably saving it as a memorabilia.
So it's had a complete opposite effect to what David Kwan, I think this must be Chinese-Canadian, intended initially.
That's right. I mean, but this is interesting. I mean, this is a creative way. I mean, if you compare to the sort of, initiative that we're introducing, for an example, banning it on certain days and so forth, I mean, now it's looking very boring. It doesn't look like it's
going to
work.
Well, you know how they charge you like 10 cents or something, 20 cents.
20 cents, guys.
I mean, it's not really prohibitive, right? I mean, if you are going to spend 100, you go to TMC now, you can't get away with less than 100 bucks, right?
Yes.
What's 20 cents? 0.02%?
But you know what I found out? Apparently it was reported in the press that the companies keep the 20 cents.
You what?
Yes, so they're actually making money from this ban.
Well, yo, that's not cricket.
No.
But what I find surprising is that you find 20 cents very little, being a Penang app yourself.
Well, you see, the thing is, we reuse and then reuse and then reuse it again because we keep all our stuff in, you know, we don't use it once, lah. We use it multiple times.
But have you seen these people who refuse to pay the 20 cents and they have like 20 items in their hands, juggling them all?
Sometimes I do that. In Sainsbury's in the UK, I used to like carry everything back in my hands.
I've seen it outside TMC, like you say, you know, they're like juggling, like, I don't know, I'm like so worried they'll just drop everything because they don't want to pay the 20 cents at all.
Those people have IC's 071. That's the Penang one.
Another thing, you know, this is interesting, is that whole trend of shaming people, isn't it? I mean, it's
nonsense,
really
creepy. Nonsense. You know how...
Yeah, I wouldn't care. I would carry that plastic bag.
You're becoming shameless societies.
I think it's funny.
Well, you know... Okay, if you really want to reduce the use of plastics, right, you can do a lot more than that. You can charge people $5 to use a plastic bag, right? Forget spending money to go and design all these nice logos and what ointment and all that. You just make it $5 per bag. I guarantee you, nobody will be using it.
Hey, poor lah, the people in the country folk and the rural folk. I don't know, lah, ringgit.
Subsidy
it's,
cut.
It's tough. I mean, I'm not saying it's really tough. When you, I know how effective that would be if you were to introduce a ringgit plastic bag and, you know, people would stop using it.
Okay, can I be a bit sensationalist here, right?
Go ahead.
Okay.
That's never stopped you, Trump. Go ahead, please. Sensationalize everything.
Okay, we talked to the Malaysian Plastics Manufacturers Association, right? They say the problem is not because plastic is in existence. They say it's because people wantonly rubbish and throw rubbish everywhere, right? And I've been to East Coast. I've been to certain parts of the country. Beautiful part of the world, gorgeous beaches. Do you know what? The beach is completely littered, not just with plastic bags, but tampons and Coke plastic bottles, everything. They just chuck it wherever they want. So it's not plastics per se, it's a human littering per se.
Absolutely. I mean, right? Yeah, I was out of the city for a while, you know, and... While I was driving along, you know, those beautiful sceneries, it takes one rubbish and people would just declare it as a rubbish collection.
Yeah,
area.
I heard they just chuck it onto the pile.
And next thing you know, you have monkeys and dogs starting to, and then it just splatters everywhere. Start looking really bad. So it starts off with one person.
So if we really want to address this whole issue, right, we should address the civic consciousness of the society. I mean, look at our public toilets. It's kind of like similar, right?
Mm. Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, as a woman especially. And I had this discussion on the breakfast grill with the PLUS CEO, saying that the highway rest stops are just horrendous. And it's not always just PLUS's fault. They do have cleaners there. But
no,
it's people
fault,
who
it's
use
people.
It. Yes. Yeah. They don't care for the next person at all.
So what makes us different from the Japanese? You know, the Japanese are famous worldwide.
I think they start
worldwide.
From very young. It's a school thing. Do you know?
At school.
In school, you are supposed to clean up your own canteen and classroom before you go home.
That's a good thing. I mean, now these days, public school, some of the premium ones, they have parents that send their helpers to help clean.
Okay, that's insane. The kids should do it themselves.
Yeah, no,
I'm sorry, but that's
right?
happening. That's really happening. They are sending like helpers to help clean up the classroom and stuff instead of having the children clean up the classroom.
Okay, Sharon, you're a bit young, but Chuang, do you remember when we were in school?
You see, this is one of those things that Wong Chan did
really
well.
You associate people just like that.
No, but do you remember when we were young?
This is really good. I must learn from this.
When we were young, the school made us pick up garbage. Did you have that in Penang, in your primary and secondary school?
Some of my parents made me do that, but also in school.
Yes.
You know?
Don't be so exclusive.
And
I don't think
they do that nowadays. So you've got to start young, actually.
Yeah, you're right.
Sharon is not only handsome, he's also very clean. I can tell.
Okay, so he's tall and clean. We've established two things.
6'1" and clean.
It's the lack of haircut. Makes me clean, actually.
Okay, well, in the interest of social media engagement, tell us what you think. Should we be more cognizant of our use of plastics and should... You know, teaching our children begin at home or in school. 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was The Killers with All These Things That I've Done. Could well be discussing Malaysia's government. this is Chuang, we're joined by Xiaoning and Sharitz. Now, I think a few minutes ago we foretold the possibility of talking about climbing on Everest. And this is an item which actually went gained a lot of attraction in the last few weeks about how in the climbing season of 2019, 11 climbers lost their lives trying to summit Mount Everest. And of course, Mount Everest is just a shade over 29,000 feet. It's the highest mountain in the world. It's become a certain mark of accomplishment if you summit that particular mountain. And very distressing because it's become an activity for wealthy people.
Yeah, status symbol, isn't
it? It's a status symbol, right? It's no longer the feat that Tenzing Norgay and Edmund Hillary did in 1953. It's actually something that rich people do. And most of the time, these guys are not particularly fit, but they've got a lot of money. So they pay these Nepalese guides to take them up the mountain, and sometimes as much as $50,000 to tell people over a brandy one night that they've climbed Mount Everest. What do you guys think about that?
Well, yeah, so that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, a lot of the times we have this ambition, but we don't have the skill for it. And I mean, that's...
You're talking about Malaysia or these people who climb Everest?
Well, you can interpret it however you want, Chong, but... I can't imagine how gloomy the sight of climbing Mount Everest would be when there's a lot of dead bodies scattered around.
It's absolutely true. You go up there, and because there are no resources to bring this rubbish galore up there, and dead bodies galore, right? And people don't even you're struggling with a sense that you can't even help these people who are, some of them are dying. They're not even dead. They're
30
dying.
30% and 40% oxygen level in comparison to when you're in the ground, isn't it?
It's called a death zone. Yeah,
beyond and you have a very very short window to do it.
Yep.
And actually, that apparently brings out the worst in people.
Yep.
Because if you're into mountain climbing, there are certain ethics involved in being a climber.
Yep.
And like you say, because it's a status symbol now, it doesn't attract the regular climbers. It just attracts everybody else who has enough money. Mm. Because all you need, apparently, is a copy of your passport, a limited biographical data, a certificate of good health, and hey, you can climb Everest already. That's it. So simple.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of the pictures that were taken, depicting the disaster from a few weeks ago, it's like a traffic jam.
It was a human traffic jam,
Traffic jam. It's like everybody's queuing up to get their Chinese mixed rice, except that it's not. It's Mount Everest.
Right. So this is taking away all those guides from those who are actually able to climb, isn't it? I mean, it's because they have limited resources, I'm sure, in Nepal, as in those who are
was criticism that this also is because Nepal, as
depends on Everest for income.
They're cash strapped, right? Mm. So they're just handing out these permits without much checking.
Okay, and in comparison to some other mountains where they've done, they've been a bit more strict with the regulation. And for an example, at least the minimum requirement is being able to set up a tent or something like that, or being able to camp in the cold.
Well, not really, because it's not just Everest. It's Aconcagua, it's Mont Blanc, it's Annapurna as well. It's many of the world's tallest peaks. And some of these peaks are actually quite accessible because they're not particularly strenuous. I mean, I'm supposed to say K2. K2 is, you've got to be very experienced to do K2, right? But most people can climb Kilimanjaro. Most people can climb Mount Fuji. It's become an income generator. It's like tourism, basically. So Visit Malaysia would make Mount Kinabalu a centerpiece of its proposition.
I can't deny, though, I do appeal to the idea of being able to, for an example, climb a mountain or do something that is physical. I mean, is this something, I don't know if it's a guy thing or something, but I've always prided, not to have six-pack, but just being able to be physically able to just, okay, I see a mountain, I want to climb it. Yeah, there you go.
You want to tick that box, right, Sharitz?
Upon being asked why the said mountaineer climbed the mountain, he said, quite simply, because it's there. My quote from some book I read.
But I don't know, I disagree with you guys. Just because it's there doesn't mean it has to be conquered, right?
Okay.
Because the damage, and we are talking about the eco damage that has been left behind, is quite great. And like you mentioned, there's trash everywhere on the mountain.
But it's the view. It's one of those moments that you would probably remember for a long time.
Sharitz has probably climbed some at least some hillocks, right?
Okay.
Presuming Shaoning hasn't.
Gassing, if you count it.
Gassing is a pimple, I should say. but the sensation of climbing a mountain as you get higher, and the view and the challenge physically, it's something that it cannot be described. And I think that is part of the appeal. Okay, coming up next, the Blondie with Sunday Girl. Very apt description for a song talking about Mount Everest. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Stevie Nicks with Talk To Me. Now I'm joined by Shaoning and Sharitz Abdullah. I think we want all Malaysians to talk to us at BFM, especially this time of morning.
That's
when
right.
We are talking about all things
sheepishly
in the kitchen sink.
To talk to us. Right.
Now, Sharitz, your selection for Story of 6:35 in the Morning, showcasing all entries for Visit Malaysia Year. That's the logo for 2020, right?
That's right. So, I mean, if you remember how our Visit Malaysia logo was last year, it was horrible. It wasn't a penguin. It was orangutan wearing sunglasses. It was a very Microsoft Paint-like quality made logo.
No, it wasn't. It's worse than a Microsoft
Paint. Really? Okay. Well.
It looked like something my five-year-old nephew could have done with his crayons, honestly.
Mm. It's terrible.
It's just tacky and looks so amateur, doesn't it?
It's abominable. It's like the snowman.
Horrible, isn't it?
Tourism Malaysia statistics, I think we haven't really surpassed 25,000 to 30,000 visitors for at least the last 12 years, right?
Every year we have a target and we never get close to it.
That's right. For the past 7-8 years or something like that. And I think 7-8 years ago probably was the last time we heard about the Malaysia Truly Asia, and that was quite a catchy theme.
That wasn't too bad, right? Mm. And then we had to cancel a couple of VMYs because of the tragedies, right? I think one of them was airlines, and then the other one was SARS. Oh, not SARS. The haze, right?
Yeah, haze.
Yeah, so I tried to do a comparison of what Visit Singapore logo would be like. They've gone. I couldn't find one. They don't have one. Huh. And then I think, Xiaoning, you said something very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, if you actually ask me what is a Visit Singapore logo, it's the movie Crazy Rich Asians. It's just one right? long Visit Singapore advertisement, right?
Yeah, right?
When you watch the movie, you're like, wow, I want to go to Singapore and see all these amazing things. But the irony of it is half of it was shot in Malaysia.
Right?
Yes.
Right. Being kicked when you're down already.
Yeah, so I guess it's whether or not we're being strategic. We're putting a lot of emphasis on logo here, aren't we? I mean, whether or not this is the working, if this is the sort of the work,
The strategy,
that puzzle that would make things work. I mean, for an example, if I think of tourism, if I want to visit something, visit a place, first thing I would do is go to the website and look at our Ministry of Tourism website.
Okay.
I mean, I would. I mean, if I want to go to, for an example, Korea, I would tourism Korea, and one of the things that I'm quite sure that will pop out because it's the gateway, isn't it? The gateway to a country. You'll start seeing some national website that would introduce the country. But if you look at Ministry of Tourism website, if we're going to spend some money on logo, how about get someone to really look
package
into the website?
Things better.
Package things better.
You're quite embarrassing.
That's minimum.
So, there's a flip side to this, right? Because Malaysia remains one of the world's undiscovered gems, in a way, right? Because not many people really, really visit Malaysia. I mean, when you think of the south of the Far East, you would think of, I don't know, Singapore.
Exotic Thailand.
You know, you go to the beaches
of
Phuket.
Cultural Bali,
etc., etc. If you're from America. So this makes our stuff a little bit cheaper, a little bit more accessible, a little bit more affordable. And, If you had been to, say, Japan, say, 20, 30 years ago, and you go to Japan today, they're a bit more abrasive, the Japanese. They're a bit more standoffish.
Yes.
You can say the same thing about Thailand. Thailand 20, 30 years ago was beautiful. People were gracious. They were humble. They were friendly. Today, you go to Thailand, they're much more abrasive. They're much more rude. They're much more offensive in a way, right?
Yes.
Because of all the deluge of tourists.
Okay.
Malaysia, but really not that so yet. We haven't been spoiled by the over-tourism.
Yeah, so I mean, we haven't been spoiled. And there's a lot of room for us to grow in this industry. There's a lot of multiplier effect with tourism. A lot of people can benefit.
It is.
It's a huge GDP contributor. For example, like in Thailand, right? It's as much as they estimate one quarter of GDP in one way is related to tourism.
Correct. But then does it drive up costs? Does it make things untenable for normal people? I mean, Venice is horrendous at any time of the year, right?
I guess it's that delicate balance.
Yeah. And does anybody in the world do it elegantly?
I think they're still trying to find the perfect model. But
right?
Yeah, it is hard to balance between having tourists so that you have a GDP contribution, plus not spoiling your whole local environment.
Yeah, right.
And then
driving
the
locals out.
I don't know if it will drive prices up, though. I mean, at the moment, the price are considered high. If you go to some of those really exotic islands that we have, prices are not cheap, especially those resorts that that you go to. It's already high. It's just a matter of bringing more volume so that a lot of people, a lot of people could benefit from it.
But whatever it is, the logo, please let's have a nicer one when it comes
out.
Yeah,
man.
And not just the logo, too overemphasis. Like you say, you got to be a bit more strategic. I mean, if it's a
and
movie
do a packaging,
or something like that, packaging.
Malaysia's marketing guru, Tan Sri Lim Kok Wing, he of Malaysia fame. Let's not get him to do it, please.
Okay.
Okay, well, tell us what you think. Does any city in the world elegantly tread the balance between keeping their, what is it, the secret sauce and tourism? Tell us what you think. 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. BFM 89.9. That was The Kinks with This Time Tomorrow. I'm Chuang, joined by Sharit and Xiaoning. And since we're on the subject of travel and leisure, gentlemen and lady, I've chosen a story from Ariana Huffington, the Huffington Post. The writer there has suggested that Airbnb is not something that he would normally choose because you don't quite know what you're going to get. And this is quite an alien concept to me because I do love Airbnb. But what do you guys think?
So this is a nightmare coming true, isn't it? I mean, with regards to all this online services and the danger that the internet poses is that anonymity. You don't know who you're dealing with a lot of the times. And both ways, I mean, is the Airbnb operator and also the Airbnb, you know,
the place.
Lodger, yeah.
Yeah, the one, place. The lodger. That's right. Because how easy it is to create a fake profile, for an example, and you never end up knowing who, you know. There's always that first time when you go to Airbnb, all these ratings and all these reviews that you get before you get there, there's always that first.
I don't know. I've never done Airbnb, guys. I'm just too scared.
Why?
You know I'm a control freak, right? I don't like the idea of like going to... It could be someone's house. What the heck's the
person
done?
No, it is someone's house. No, it's definitely someone's house.
Sometimes there are these people who run Airbnbs like businesses, right? So it's empty, but most of them are people's homes, right?
Yeah.
You don't know what they've done in that home, right? And
don't care, you're just going to stay in there for like 6 hours a night and off you go in the morning.
Just bring your own bed sheet as well. Yeah.
There was one time I rented it because you know because my IC has 07 inside, right? Which is how I'm Penang, right? Penang people like Airbnb because it's cheaper, right? So Portugal, I went on a junket once. I stayed in someone a single mother's boy's room. So I was in a son's room, right?
Where was this though?
Lisbon.
Oh, in Lisbon. Okay.
Somewhere in the nether regions lah, you know. So I was sleeping in a single bed with his like teddy bear there and it's all quite innocent.
Did you find it like a bit invasive?
A bit. And then there was the German businessman next door who took the double room. And then in the morning, he banged on my door and said, "Why did you just steal my wallet?" And I go, "Huh? Steal my wallet?" He assumed. So you run all these risks, okay. You know.
But you know, you end up coming out with stories like this, which is fascinating. Where a lot of people would like to hear it.
From the front line.
That's right. So Airbnb, I mean, there's a lot of budget travelers out there, Xiaoning, and
Airbnb can be very expensive. It's not only just for budget.
Be very cheap because you can rent a room and sometimes room are cheap. Is this a way?
And then you meet this guy
who
accuses you of stealing a wallet.
Yeah, it was a bit distressing, but I told him quite firmly that I don't do that.
Okay, I can paint a picture like you know a big German guy, an aspiring six foot one Asian guy,
minus six inches.
That's right.
No, but guys, isn't it like kind of daunting to go to this house, someone's house for the first time? You know. Nothing about them. You know nothing about the house, and you open the door, and you never know what you're going to get. Right, like this lady, she found a typewriter with teeth. I mean,
ayo, yeah, la. I mean, if they go to my house, they'll see much worse things than that. Do you know what I mean? but
I think that's part of the adventure. Because then that's the local culture. That's how you immerse yourself with.
Most times than not, I've had good experiences with Airbnb. Okay. I mean, I just came back from Japan, right? And basically at Osaka, we took Airbnb. Well, the whole way through. But we had very nice... I mean, in Kyoto, we had this really nice place. Never saw the owner once, but it's all automated. Wi-Fi, did laundry, everything. Fantastic. Good Wi-Fi, everything.
So there are always more pluses than minuses.
Many more pluses than minuses.
And they're transparent as well, in a sense. I mean, there's the amenities that they provide and so forth. Everything is listed down before you actually decide whether to stay or not.
It's just good that we have more options, I guess, when we travel.
Absolutely.
We don't have to stay in hotels anymore.
No. You know, Penang is a place... I mean, I think Malaysia is one of the biggest listings for Airbnb in Asia, because I know because I did the research for The Grill some months ago.
Oh, yeah.
And this is interesting because you know how we've got this housing oversupply thing going on, right? A lot of people have bought homes and it's not vacant and all that. So what Airbnb, it soaks up this excess supply. It's actually quite good.
Yeah, but that also is causing a lot of problems. I mean, a lot of condos now are red-flagging it because there's, I mean, definitely there's some security threat because you don't know who goes in and out and you can't keep account. Yeah? And like you said, someone might steal your wallet.
Yeah, absolutely. Or accused of lying.
Accused of lying, yeah.
So in the interest of social media engagement, tell us what you think. Is Airbnb good or bad for the country? 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.